There are a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL draft this year. My name is Ben Solak, and I host the Ringer NFL Draft Show with Danny Kelly, Danny Heifetz, and Greg Horlbeck. We cover trades, free agency, and the draft, which is, obviously. We'll tell you about everything, which includes which quarterbacks are good, which quarterbacks are bad, and which quarterbacks are just Kirk Cousins. That is the Ringer NFL Draft Show. Search the Ringer NFL Draft Show on Spotify.
This episode of The Town is brought to you by FX's Feud, Capote versus the Swans. The second installment in Ryan Murphy's Feud anthology tells the story of acclaimed writer Truman Capote, once a confidant to society's most elite women, whom he nicknamed the Swans. Starring Naomi Watts, Diane Lane, Chloe Sevigny, Calista Flockhart, Demi Moore, Molly Ringwald, and Tom Hollander. For your Emmy consideration, visit fxnetworks.com/FYC. This episode is brought to you by Netflix, presenting The Crown, as the beloved series bids farewell. Deserving of praise on every level, says New York Magazine. Throughout its groundbreaking six-season run, The Crown has featured three different casts, earned 273 award nominations, and secured 70 award wins, including Outstanding Drama Series. Critics rave, The Crown secures its place in the pantheon of television history. From creator and writer Peter Morgan, the final season stars Imelda Staunton, Dominic West, and SAG Award winner Elizabeth Debicki. The Crown, for your Emmy consideration in all categories. It is Friday, February 2nd. If you're into TikTok, like producer Craig is, you might have noticed that there's no Taylor Swift or Drake music on your favorite dance videos or makeup tutorials right now. As of yesterday, Universal Music Group, the world's largest music company, has pulled all of its songs from the video sharing app. Hundreds and hundreds of artists. UMG says TikTok, which, remember, is owned by the Chinese company ByteDance, had not addressed its concerns over AI-generated music. And more importantly, the real issue here, TikTok isn't paying enough in royalties. Ultimately, TikTok is trying to build a music-based business without paying fair value for the music, UMG says. TikTok has responded by saying UMG has, quote, chosen to walk away from the powerful support of a platform with well over a billion users. They then accused the company of putting its, quote, own greed above the interests of their artists and songwriters. These kinds of licensing standoffs aren't uncommon in entertainment. We see it all the time in the cable TV carriage disputes. But this tension has been an especially big force in music over the past couple decades. Technology and distribution platforms versus artists' rights. Everything from Napster to YouTube to Pandora and now TikTok. Most deals ultimately come down to the wire, and occasionally you'll see the rhetoric spill into the public. But it's rare to see UMG deploy the so-called nuclear option here, pulling all of its content. UMG says TikTok accounts for only about 1% of its revenue. But it's not just revenue, of course. TikTok, with those billion users, is among the best marketing platforms for artists, a place where new talent is discovered and even old songs can catch fire. I'm thinking of the Kate Bush song from Stranger Things or the Fleetwood Mac skateboard video. Current example is Murder on the Dance Floor from the Saltburn movie. Craig's been doing a bunch of TikTok dances to that one. And now a 20-year-old song is charting. A generation of young fans rely on the app for curation, just like my generation looked to MTV or radio. It's a fascinating dispute, so today I brought in Ethan Millman to break it down. Ethan's a great young Rolling Stone reporter. He covers a lot of legal disputes and business issues in music. He's been following the current standoff pretty closely. So today it's Universal Music versus TikTok, and who needs who more? From The Ringer and Puck, I'm Matt Bellany, and this is The Town. All right, we are here with Ethan Millman, who is a staff writer at Rolling Stone magazine, focused on the music industry. Welcome, Ethan.
Thanks for having me.
Happy Grammys weekend. Are you going to the show?
I will be there. I'll be in the press room seeing if any stars come back to give thanks or whatever. It's usually kind of quiet, but it'll be fun.
So obviously, everybody out in LA this week for Grammys week is talking about this UMG versus TikTok dispute. This stuff is not uncommon. We see these licensing disputes a lot. It is pretty rare to see them go this far to pull all the content. And I'm going to read to you a text that I got from a music industry insider who texted me this morning because I made a mention in my Puck newsletter last night about how, you know, TikTok had forced UMG to do this. And this person says, Just FYI, UMG always insists they get paid outrageously large sums for content to be on TikTok. They insist on non-commercial terms / holdbacks, which are, you know, additional things. Most labels are supportive partners to TikTok, but UMG has been incredibly hostile. Their artists deserve fair recognition and compensation for their work, but the platform shouldn't be extorted. What do you think about that? Generally speaking, I am a pro-artist person. I think that if you are a creator, you deserve to be paid what you are worth, and that some of these large platforms have a history of exploiting artists to build their very profitable businesses. What is UMG's reputation, though, here? And are they being outrageous?
They're the biggest dog in the fight, you know? They're easily the biggest record label on the planet. It's not surprising if they're going to be rougher because they have so much market share and they're the leader in this. You know, people talk about Lucian Grange a lot and how when he makes a decision...
He's the CEO.
Yes, Chairman and CEO Lucian Grange. You know, when he makes a decision, that sets a lot of precedent in the music industry. I think he's allowed to be more powerful. I think that they can do that. Obviously, like, but TikTok has pointed out, like, that there are other labels that have already made deals with them in the past, but UMG hasn't. I don't know if I only want to call it merely hostility. I don't know I don't know what it is, what, like, the new deals with Warner, like, they signed over the summer last year, what the difference is. But I've talked to enough managers who feel like, at least for them, for their artists, the sentiment is like, and these are some people who have overseen, like, viral TikTok campaigns where they've seen a lot of music, you know, or their songs, like 45-second clips over and over again, millions of videos and, you know, a lot of views. And they're like, it's a paltry, insignificant amount of money we've gotten for that. And it's practically like, it's nearly a stream. Maybe it's not. But I don't know if it's only extortive. I think that they could be more aggressive and maybe it could be too extreme. But I don't think that it's out of the ordinary for something like that for UMG to try and push for more.
No, they want preferential treatment, I think. You know, they're like, we're the biggest dog. Why aren't you giving us, you know, algorithmic promotion above and beyond what the others get? Why aren't you treating us better? Why aren't you giving, you know, there should be some advantage to being the biggest. And I'm sure, I mean, I understand why TikTok would push back on that. They don't want to. You know, in the movie business, Disney for many years has been able to extract bigger percentages of opening weekend box office from the theater chains because they're Disney and they have had the power of Marvel and Star Wars and all the other franchises. So when they go to these negotiations, they get more. I mean, it's sort of standard. But it gets to the question of who needs who more, because it's not just money. There is a huge promotional element in this dispute, and it's sort of unquantifiable. You wrote about this in Rolling Stone, an artist named Cody Fry, whose song was blowing up on TikTok, or the Chinese version, and then boom, it's pulled based on this, you know, larger corporate dispute. So there are victims here, and I wonder how long this can go without the artists kind of saying to the label, listen, man, you know, I need that TikTok audience.
And I'm glad you brought that up because it's a vast pool even within UMG about who they're representing. You know, Cody in this case, this is not a Taylor Swift case. This is a, I don't want to just call him only developing. He's had multiple successful, you know, runs with TikTok before, but he would even say, you know, I'm a comparably smaller artist. But I think what his sentiment to me was what I think a lot of artists of that size is, which is like, you know, we weren't consulted on this. No one said anything. And even if they agree with Universal in this case, there's this idea that, well, you guys are going to be fine. TikTok is going to be fine. Both of you guys are billion-dollar corporations, and we are the ones getting sandwiched in between here, not being able to do anything. I'm curious how Universal responds to that, or if that becomes a mounting pressure, or if that's just outside noise that they can ignore until, you know, they decide to make some better deal or something.
Well, and the ultimate artists that Universal cares about most are the big artists, the Taylor Swifts and Drakes, and I'm sure they're happy about this. I mean, Taylor Swift herself has been pretty outspoken defending the rights of creators and, you know, holding out for more money. She has herself pulled her catalog from different music services when they wouldn't pay what she wanted. And I imagine she's very supportive of this campaign. But as you said, it's not necessarily her that is a victim here. And it's not like all music is gone from TikTok. I mean, that's the thing here. I mean, the music industry is much smaller than, like, say, the Hollywood studios, because there are three companies that control the vast majority of recorded music. So you kind of have to deal with those three companies if you are launching a distribution platform. But as big as UMG is, TikTok is still full of music from the other labels. And I could see a world where TikTok just becomes a platform for songs that are not UMG artists.
It's true. It's something I've been thinking of is how nuclear this can get, though, because what also is really weird about the music business is there are two copyrights to every single thing that you're going to be. There's the recorded side, which, you know, I think that's what the average publication would think of already when, you know, we're talking about stuff getting pulled. They think Billie Eilish is on Interscope and Olivia Rodrigo's on Geffen, whatever. Okay, those are gone. But there's also all these songwriters signed to UMPG, the publishing group, and Universal confirmed that its dealings between UMPG and TikTok were also expired. And so, for example, Steve Lacy, he licenses his music through RCA, owned by Sony, but that's for the recording side. But he is a UMPG songwriter that have rights to that too. Does this expand into something beyond just these recorded songs? I don't know how, if it gets to that point, I'm curious, but if that continues to be a problem, there is more leverage than just whatever the master recording is.
Yeah. And TikTok is different from, say, one of these jukebox style services like a Spotify or Apple Music, where if UMG pulled its music from Spotify, it would be World War III because people use that as their primary source for listening to their favorite songs. I'm not so sure about TikTok. Yes, of course, everyone, they want to put the Drake song on their makeup tutorial. They want to, you know, they want all the songs to be available to them to put with their videos. But if they disappear, you can still make the video. Just choose another song. And it's a little bit different. And then obviously the discovery stuff, you're not going to discover those artists, but you may not even notice. So it's a little different than the outcry that I think you would see if it were one of these other services, which gives TikTok a little bit of leverage here.
It's true. I mean, like you said, I don't think that it'd be possible to just pull from Spotify at this point, because not only, you know, would that outrage the artist, I mean, how is Universal Music going to make money if they don't have their music on the biggest streaming platform on the planet? That's shooting themselves completely.
Yeah. Although Spotify has problems making money with that music on the platform, but that's another issue.
Yeah.
Give us a little background here on TikTok and its relationship with music, because people don't realize this platform started, it was originally called Musical.ly. Like, it, music has been intertwined with TikTok from the very beginning.
Yeah. UMG seemed pretty keen on bringing up that former name in its letter earlier this week. So its origins were from, you know, mid-2010s, this app, Musical.ly, very popular among Gen Z, lip syncing. It was in its DNA, music. It was not a music app, but it was so integral to how that worked. By 2018, after ByteDance, I think a year ago, they bought Musical.ly. And then by 2018, they merged into what is now TikTok. That music DNA didn't really go away. I mean, it's such a big part of how interaction and content works. Most of the videos that you're going to scroll through are going to have some music in there.
And that's a key point, because music has fueled the rise of this pretty powerful platform. It's not the only reason TikTok is popular, but it's a pretty big factor in why it caught on and why it is the force that it is today.
Yeah, and that's the main leverage point that Universal is trying to bank on here. They very much believe that without music content, and specifically their content, what's the appeal of this app? All these creators, like, you can't just soundtrack all of your videos with nothing. I mean, it's so important that you can use music, and especially like good music, not crappy royalty-free music, some from the biggest artists on the planet. And what is the appeal if all of a sudden that's all gone?
And it's been a point of contention pretty much since the beginning, what the artists are paid. And this is a theme. I mean, this is not a new issue. It comes up with YouTube, where YouTube pays less than some of the other platforms. It keeps coming up. And Lucian Grange at UMG has been one of the biggest proponents for changing these deals and for giving the artists more control. He's been very outspoken against AI, and he's actually sued. He sued this other platform, Triller, saying it had not paid licensing fees. So it's not like this is coming out of nowhere. This is a constant battle that these labels wage. But what would you say that the music industry's relationship with TikTok in general is these days?
It's still very crucial for them,
but,
you know?
Yeah, but frenemies, though. They're frenemies.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're not sending a nuclear open letter calling like a company extortive for someone that you're happy with. but I'd wager all these A&Rs are still going to probably need to go on TikTok to help with the discovery of finding some of these artists, these, you know, unsigned artists. I don't think they're going to stop looking there because that's where all the music is still blowing up. It's not the only place, but even if Universal isn't, if their music isn't there, it doesn't stop the reliance in other parts of the business beyond the music just being there. You know, managers are going to want their artists to still interact with fans there. Even if it's not posting their videos, it's personality things, it's other content. It's a real way that people have gotten this interaction with their fans. It feels like you're immediately there. Same with like a lot of other social media, but the community there is just so direct.
But that's a key point, though, because what other platforms stand to benefit here? If I am a Swiftie and my entire existence is posting videos of myself skateboarding or dancing to Taylor Swift songs, and all of a sudden I go on TikTok and I can't do that anymore, where do I go? Who benefits? Is it Reels? Is it YouTube? Where is it?
So at least people I've talked to this week have told me, you know, I've had a lot of success on Instagram Reels in the past month. Stuff has gone up 500%, whatever. And that's before, you know, all this stuff with TikTok. I very much wonder how aggressively the music teams at Reels and at Shorts are knocking on the door saying, hey, you know, we're going to, let's see if we can make these viral moments.
Yeah. Did you see the Meta earnings yesterday? I mean, it's going through the roof. And, you know, I know Instagram is not necessarily the driver of revenue, but Reels has been a success for Instagram.
And it's linked. I mean, there's a lot of appeal of Reels being tied to Instagram because that's still like every gigantic artist on the planet has a huge Instagram presence. And you know, if you can tie that sort of community into that separate Instagram community, like there is appeal there. That's kind of different than TikTok. YouTube Shorts, they try to link it to YouTube itself. Like there are these different things that these factors that their competitors have had tried to differentiate with. I don't think they've done it as effectively as TikTok, but it'll be interesting to see how much these other competitors can start to fill that void that Universal is looking to fill right now.
This episode is brought to you by Netflix, presenting The Crown as the beloved series bids farewell. Deserving of praise on every level, says New York Magazine. Throughout its groundbreaking six-season run, The Crown has featured three different casts, earned 273 award nominations, and secured 70 award wins, including Outstanding Drama Series. Critics rave, The Crown secures its place in the pantheon of television history. From creator and writer Peter Morgan, the final season stars Imelda Staunton, Dominic West, and SAG Award winner Elizabeth Debicki. The Crown, for your Emmy consideration in all categories.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And what are the royalty rates across the platforms? Are those known? I don't follow it closely enough to know what the hierarchy is of royalty rates across the social platforms.
It's not like immediately clear the same way with Spotify or Apple, how you just easily quantify that. But I know, for example, Meta back in 2022, there was a story about how there were new licensing deals that had some form of ad rev splits, which was different than, you know, what TikTok's older deals. I don't know what the new deals are with Warner and Sony, whatever, but it was these shorter deals that was just like a lump sum advance, basically, from what I've heard. That's going to be different than your Spotify, which makes sense. You know, I mean, Spotify and Apple Music 99% of the whole thing is just streaming music along with podcasts, but all music, it's not the same. So you can't expect the revenue to be the same for these social platforms.
Right. And again, it's not material to the overall bottom line. That's kind of the problem, is that they have outsized influence over the culture and over, you know, the way that people discover music, yet the financials are not there.
Yeah, like you said in the intro, it's 1% is what UMG said in their letter this week. They made something, what, I'm trying to think, maybe almost $10, $11 billion last year. So that'd be 100, 110 million. Like, that's not zero, but when you've got all that money, it's a rounding error.
Yeah. And seems like it would be worth putting up a fight over this issue to make a point. And if it means, you know, because I've heard that this dispute was a while coming. TikTok was prepared for this for a month. They had the statement ready to go. They knew that this negotiation was not going in the right direction. I wonder if UMG approached this almost as an example maker. Like, we need to draw our lines in the sand, and this is a good place to draw the line because it's not that much revenue. It's a easy target. TikTok being a Chinese company, there's a lot of skepticism about them. I actually won't put the app on my phone. I know people think I'm crazy, but I do believe that they monitor and they're using the data, and I don't have the app for that reason. But obviously I'm in the minority. Most young people do. And I think that UMG saw this as a perfect target to make a point.
You're right. The risk is for at least pure revenue isn't as direct. I mean, it still could very much be like what happens. I mean, how many fewer hits are you going to have?
That's sort of unknowable. I know. It's just hard. It's hard to say that. I mean, you know, I just don't know if we'll ever know what the impact is.
It'll be an interesting case study if this actually drags on, but it could end in a couple of weeks or who knows.
Yeah. What do you think? Do you think this will go on for 6 months, or do you think that we'll get a press release on Monday morning?
Well, when did you think that these strikes would end?
The Hollywood strikes? Yeah, I know. I was off by about a month. Lucas was more right on. I said it would go from May until September. It ended up going to October for the writers, a little bit longer for the actors. But that was about 6 months of strikes, and they made their point, and they got what they wanted, or they said they wanted. I don't know how long this is going to go.
I genuinely don't either. I'm hesitant to give that that sort of fear because I feel like these always age like milk. But
yeah,
I do think that it could end sooner. I mean, there were a lot of people who thought that this nuclear letter was just posturing to try and finish it at the 11th hour. Clearly, that didn't end up being the case. But it's unclear. YouTube, it was months and months back in the late 2000s when Warner pulled before they finally brought it back in. But it's drastic.
How long was Taylor's music off of Spotify?
So it was in 2014 that she'd removed it, and it came back on in 2017.
Okay, so 3 years of no Taylor Swift on Spotify at a time of pretty immense growth for Spotify. Now, Taylor then is not Taylor today, but she was pretty big then, and there was another option for her fans. They could go to Apple, they could go and buy the music.
I mean, I think a lot of people who aren't following the music business, it feels like it's been so long already that the streaming services are the way to go. But 10 years ago, I mean, it was still this baby platform that was just starting to really grow. Mm-hmm. So it's not even that easy to just say, wow, that was the worst decision, you know, or like some crazy decision. That it'd be crazier now to pull from something like Spotify than it would have been in 2014.
Yeah. And the artists are so savvy about this stuff. I mean, there's a line, Ben Cesario, the New York Times writer on music, he had a line in his piece about this saying, talk to an artist for 2 minutes about the business and they will tell you they should make more money from streaming. That's a good succinct way to put it. Everybody thinks they're being ripped off by streaming, yet everybody keeps doing it.
It's funny because it's both true and also there's a lot more context needed for it because the record labels, they are making a huge amount of money from streaming. Everyone always says, look at Spotify, save the music industry. So yes, it's true. The artists need to get more from streaming. I would never say that a streaming service shouldn't pay more, you know, for an art. Of course, it should be the rights holder getting the lion's share. But I don't think people look inward enough about the label side and think, wait, how does a record company make $11 billion? And how does an executive make hundreds of millions of dollars on this? Like, there is money coming in.
Yeah, it's just so weighted towards the big stars. I mean, that I think is the issue, right? Because those are the songs that are delivering the lion's share of the usage. And, you know, we could make the argument that maybe that's unfair, but like, honestly, like, that's the public speaking what they like. And there is algorithmic amplification involved, and maybe the algorithms could do a better job of dispersing this out, but people like what they like.
And I think that dynamic is part of what's made it complicated with how artists feel about this decision, even, you know, into their deals. Like, I think there's probably plenty of artists who have a lot to recoup still on their deals. And yep. TikTok is the one spot they've actually been successful to launch something. Maybe they got signed from TikTok. And now this company that's making a ton of money and isn't, you know, and they're still in debt to finally start making money on their music again, pulls the one tool that they could have relied on. I think that makes it very difficult for them.
Yeah, that's why it'll be interesting to see if anyone addresses this at the Grammys, because it's complicated. And I could see some of the big artists being like, yeah, screw TikTok. You know, someone on stage could be like, TikTok, pay the artists. TikTok, pay the labels. But there could be others that are like, you know what? Why is my label keeping me off TikTok? So we will see. Craig, you are our TikTok enthusiast on the show. Which side are you on in this dispute?
It's hard because when you say side, I think that Universal should do whatever they can to get their music on TikTok, because I think it is the only way that you can discover music now and actually amplify.
Even if they've
got to
take a haircut or take less money than they think they are worth.
I think artists are going to be very upset with their label if their music is not on TikTok while other labels are and are getting amplification and getting famous. It is the surefire way to blow up overnight. We've seen it hundreds of times.
Yeah. So you think artists are going to leave their labels if this drags on?
It depends on how long this takes, but yeah, I think it's going to be a big issue with young artists when they're looking at other young artists at different labels whose songs are blowing up on the app.
We will see. Thank you, Ethan. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
All right, we are back with the call sheet. Craig, you excited for the final season premiere of Curb Your Enthusiasm this Sunday?
I cannot wait. It is my favorite television show on the air.
I'm so happy you like it, because I worry that the brilliance of Larry David is lost on the younger generation. I mean, he's my favorite celebrity. I have only been starstruck twice in my life, him and Oprah. I actually went up to him at the William Morris Oscar party 1 year, and I just basically said, I need to meet you. He was very typically Larry David and was like, oh, okay, all right, so what are we doing? Okay.
Yeah, I love him to death. I've seen every episode of Curb. I've seen every episode of Seinfeld. And now Seinfeld, it's not going away. You know how there's the joke that like the Simpsons have made an episode for everything? Like anything that's happened in the world, you can trace back to the Simpsons. Seinfeld is kind of becoming that, where like something happens in real life and there's a Seinfeld episode about it.
Right.
So
it's
persisted.
Oh, I mean, he's a genius. And he doesn't typically do a lot of press. When I was at Hollywood Reporter, we tried to get him for a cover story many, many times. It was always some excuse, I don't want to do it or whatever. The guy's doing a press tour. I mean, the whole Elmo thing on the Today Show was pretty amazing. I just saw his quote. If you didn't see the clip, he attacked Elmo and like grabbed his face and then ran off the set on the Today Show. And he put out a statement. He said he attacked Elmo because he was, quote, going on about mental health, and I had to listen to every word, and I was going, oh my God, I don't think I can take another second of this.
He doesn't miss.
He does not miss. He is 100% consistent. I know I've talked to HBO people about Larry, and like they have the funniest relationship with him, because like, yeah, they don't tell him what to do. They don't, you know, get to say. He just will call one day and say, like, oh, I think I have another season. And they'll be like, okay, let's do it. You know, they're doing a pop-up Latte Larry's this weekend that I think I'm going to go to.
I know. I'm devastated. I'm not in town. I'm in New York for the Rewatchables tour.
Well, I will get you a t-shirt. I will get you a Latte Larry t-shirt.
Thank you.
And they're doing that, I think, just for promotion and also, I think, for the early Emmy campaign.
And I think this is the best sign. It's the most clear sign that Larry's not doing another season is the amount of press he is doing right now.
Oh, yeah. And I am told by people, I don't want to give anything away, but I'm told that when you see the final episode, you will understand that this is the end.
Even though he has died before.
I know he's died in a previous season and then came back, but I'm looking forward to the final episode. So the pop-up is a sign they're also doing some Emmys campaigning, which is a good sign. And my prediction today is that finally Larry David will either win the Outstanding Comedy Series Emmy for Curb, or he will get a Best Actor win for playing himself. And that has not happened.
Yeah, both of which he's never won, shockingly. And he's kind of set up nicely. Ted Lasso's gone next year. He's going to be going up against The Bear, which is not
a comedy.
The
Bear is a big deal. The Bear, I think, expects to win again, and we'll see. Yeah. The Emmy voters tend to just click the same box they voted for last year. But I think that if they do it right, 12 seasons, 24 years, the fact that the show has been nominated 51 times and has only won two minor Emmys for directing and editing. Larry has never won an editing, even for writing, even for himself, let alone comedy series. It is time.
He's won a couple for Seinfeld for writing and stuff like that, but nothing for Curb.
So if you talk to comedy writers, what comedy writer doesn't have a Curb spec in their drawer? Everybody.
I think it's because Curb is seen as, half improvised. So maybe the writing isn't as valued.
And how do you give a guy an acting award for playing himself? But who cares? It's great.
Easy.
It's funny.
It's easy. Just give it to him.
Yeah, and all of these comedy series that get nominations and wins, Curb is actually funny, unlike most of these shows.
And it still manages to toe the line perfectly and is kind of in a separate category where it doesn't really get in trouble for anything it does, which is great.
It's brilliant. It will go down in the Hall of Fame.
So you think this would be a Larry David career achievement kind of situation?
Of course. He's 76 years old, one of the most influential figures in comedy of the past three decades. Got to give it to him. So the campaign starts here. We're going to be monitoring this. And if the TV Academy does not vote for Larry David, I'm coming after them. All right, that's the show for today. I want to thank my guest, Ethan Millman, producer Craig Horlbeck, our editor, Jesse Lopez. And I want to thank you. We will see you next week.